2. Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and an independent streaming internet radio station broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, March 9, 2008. It's now 9:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Or you can email us anytime at comments@libertytalkradio.com. Also, I encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com. And that two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Good evening, everyone. This evening, I am pleased to announce that we have Paul Jacob as our guest. He'll be calling in a moment, and I'd like to give you a little introduction about him. Paul is a senior advisor at the Sam Adams Alliance, an acclaimed media commentator. Paul hosts an online radio and print opinion program, Common Sense, which reaches a growing list of over 15,000 email subscribers and is aired daily by more than 150 stations in 48 states. For more than a decade, Paul was the Term Limits Movement's leading voice, running U.S. Term Limits, the nation's largest term limits group. Currently, Paul writes a weekly column for townhall.com, and his work has also been featured in USA Today, the New York Daily News Roll Call, the Washington Times, and the Chicago Tribune. He has appeared on Fox News, CNN, Inside Politics, NBC, Today Show, and ABC's Nightline. Paul has been named as a rising star in politics by Campaigns and Elections magazine, received the Society for Individual Liberties Phoenix Award for contributions to the advancement of liberty in America, and was dubbed one of the best and the rightest by National Nerd Journal. And here he is, folks.
Hello, Joe.
Paul, is that you?
It is.
Paul, thank you so much. It's a real privilege and honor to have you on our radio broadcast this evening, and thank you for taking the time to join us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be invited. I look forward to talking.
First thing I'd like to say, Paul, I know you were at the Oklahoma Libertarian Convention a couple of weeks ago, and you were a keynote speaker there, I understand.
That's right.
I planned to go, but I was stricken with the Oklahoma flu, or whatever you call it, and I was bedridden, so I was unable to make it. And I very rarely get hit that hard, but I got hit that hard this year, so I really regret not making it. Paul, out of curiosity, will you be at the Missouri Libertarian Convention this year?
No, I'm not planning to, but I hope to be back in Oklahoma on a regular basis talking with people. There's a lot going on all over the country in terms of attacks on the initiative process.
But, right.
In Oklahoma, obviously, the attacks are of a more personal nature and some of the most vicious attacks against the process anywhere in the country.
Right. Well, I plan to go to the Missouri one because good friends of mine who are now living in that area will be there and we'll join up with them. And I regretted missing this one. Anyway, enough of that. Paul, there is I read an introduction about you. There is so much that can be said, and there's so, we could probably talk for about a month. I almost would like to give you free rein. Is there any particular subject that you would like to focus on this evening for this broadcast and for our listeners?
Well, you know, it seems to me that the big subject in America is that that I think we need to talk about in terms of a big picture is that this country has been a breath of fresh air throughout the ages, throughout all of history, and in the world right now because of one thing, and that is freedom. That in this country we cherish freedom. The individual has it. It's the people, all of us as individuals, who are the sovereigns. The government works for us, not the other way around. Politicians are our servants. We're not their servants. And it seems to me that we are losing that conception with and there's a competing idea. And that idea is that government ought to do everything that anybody can, any majority or plurality decides is good to do. You know, we'll be wearing, crash helmets at the breakfast table soon. Some people have their way. And it's almost funny, you know, the trans fat ban in New York, and I do a radio commentary, Common Sense, that is sent out by email and is on the web and is at a lot of radio stations around the country. And I have a lot of fun with some of these nanny state lunacies. But I did a recent commentary where I pointed out, you know, they're really not all that funny. And the reason they're not funny is because if we lose the freedom we have, because we decide that we want everything to be perfectly safe and we all want to get into everybody else's business, then we are not only losing a little something, we're losing something big, and it means that our children and our grandchildren will live in a world that we have been awfully lucky not to live in. We have had such freedom and opportunity, and by golly, we ought to pass that along. And I say that in a big picture. The maybe more narrowly casted thing I'd like to talk about tonight is the initiative process,
okay,
where people can petition their government to put laws on the ballot. Most states don't have it. We don't have it nationally, but most cities have it, and states like Oklahoma and Arkansas and Missouri do have it. And it's a critical process that has allowed us to do term limits and tax limits and spending limits and fix eminent domain. There's a great petition going on in Missouri right now that deals with eminent domain reform and stopping the government from stealing people's property to give it to someone who they think will produce more tax dollars with it. That was attempted in Oklahoma, of course, by initiative, and was thrown off by the court, which lately has thrown everything off that people try to do. But As some of your listeners may know, in Oklahoma, I'm one of the Oklahoma Three, and that is three people who were involved in that eminent domain petition drive. I was an advisor. I've advised a number of petition efforts around the country. I live in Virginia, and help activists all over the country use the initiative process, and we were involved in that in the Taxpayer Bill of Rights petition. And the folks working on that effort talked to state officials, were told the rules, followed those rules, and now, 2 years after that petition drive, in fact, almost 3 years after that petition drive, the Attorney General Drew Edmonds in Oklahoma is prosecuting three of us involved in it on an outrageous charge, conspiracy to defraud the state, arguing that we use non-residents to collect signatures.
Right.
Everyone who collected signatures, to our knowledge, declared themselves to be a resident, and it would be just a terrible miscarriage of justice like so many things that happen these days, except this carries a 10-year prison term and a $25,000 fine. I'm not a wealthy man, but I haven't given a second thought about the $25,000. I have three kids. They need me. I have a wife who probably doesn't need me, but still loves me anyway. and I'll tell you, this is an attack aimed at and not just backing me away from this process, which has been so essential to change and reform, but scaring the daylights out of all kinds of people and basically sending a message that don't you dare petition your government. This process is also under attack with new laws to restrict it in Missouri that have passed the House and that are now in the Senate that I hope will be stopped. There have been efforts in other states. There's actually a good bill in the House, HB 3350 in Oklahoma. But you can see where this leads, I think, Joe. We have a wonderful heritage that we have got to protect, and that is freedom for the individual and citizen control of government. And it is under attack, and I knew it was under attack before they decided to attack me personally.
Right.
But what it tells me is that these folks, the powers that be, will do nearly anything to stop this process, because to me, it's the slingshot
right.
that David had against Goliath, and they are scared to death of the people having this little slingshot.
You know, I read an article recently that compared the elections in Russia with the elections here in the United States, and they actually made a case that the elections in Russia were actually a little bit more democratic than our own, in that they allow more people to run, and there's less restriction, and there's actually less restriction in the media for those people running, unlike here where Ron Paul is running and he gets absolutely no press whatsoever. We tend to condemn the Russians for their lopsided types of elections, but we don't consider ours to be lopsided the way we do it, and yet it's unconscionable the way the secondary tier candidates have been treated in this last election.
It certainly is, and if people remember back years ago when Ross Perot was running, the rules for getting into the debates had always been, I believe it was 5%, polling 5% in national polls.
Yeah.
Ross Perot met that requirement, and the Federal Election Commission decided, no, he had to have 10%. He happened to be polling 9 at that time, and denied him entry into the
right.
debates. And first of all, that a federal tribunal in Washington has that kind of power to begin with ought to terrify every American.
Absolutely.
Patient. But second of all, that agency, that tribunal in Washington, the FEC, is established in such a way that it is on its face unconstitutional.
Correct.
It is comprised of half Republicans and half Democrats. What that means is that, of course, they can't effectively police, not that I want them to, because in the Constitution, if you read the First Amendment, you don't even have to get past the first, five, six, eight words. It says Congress shall make no law. Congress is not supposed to be regulating elections and
right.
regulating speech,
right.
and yet doing it. But it's also, they aren't able to enforce anything against the powerful forces that are out there spending a lot of money. What these laws mean is that you and I, if we're willing to spend more than $2,200 for a candidate, we can't do it because we're not wealthy. But no matter how much we scrimp and save to do it, but if you're George Soros or whoever is the Republican equivalent, and you want to spend millions, well, of course, you can do it all kinds of ways.
Right.
It's a fraud on the people. But the very establishment of it is designed not to be able to enforce things against Republicans and Democrats. But Ross Perot wasn't a Republican or Democrat. Where is his equal rights?
That's
on
right.
On that panel, the Libertarian or the Constitution Party or the Green Party, when they have a case before the FEC board of Star Chamber members, what kind of rights do they have? None.
None.
It is a jury,
right.
in effect, that is slanted against them. That's totally unconstitutional, completely violates the 14th Amendment, rips it up and throws it away, in fact. It's just unconscionable, and yet this agency has more and more power. And frankly, you know, it doesn't get talked about in the mainstream media a lot because they happen to love McCain-Feingold. But one of the things, it's not like there's just one thing that conservatives and a lot of people don't like about John McCain. There are a number of them. But I think the number one thing is McCain-Feingold. I don't care what someone's other positions are. If they don't believe in the First Amendment, if they don't believe I have a right to speak my mind freely, then I don't need to hear the rest of their platform.
That's correct. That's correct. You know, I have a personal gripe. I ran for U.S. Congress in the 2000 general election when Oklahoma had a Libertarian Party, right before we were deleted from the slate. And the League of Women Voters held a debate here in Tulsa and intentionally left me out. And I just couldn't. I just wanted to sue everybody when that happened to me. And I was so angry. I said, you know, of all the organization that had a fight for voting rights is now denying a candidate for office the right to debate and denying the public the right to hear what I have to say. That very organization that took to the streets to get their rights to vote, it now is denying my rights, and I could not get over that. So anyway, I had a little personal.
Well, they have become. First of all, they were pushed out of the way years ago, and I guess maybe they didn't like being pushed out of the way by the powers that be, so they decided to become lapdogs for the powers that be.
Right.
And now kind of go along with that, but frankly, they have been captured. They are now basically not a pro women's rights, not a pro anybody's rights. They are a pro powers that be establishment group, and it's a shame. My mother was a member of the League of Women Voters. I know a lot of people who have been members, some people who are still members, all of them that I know of are pretty sick about what's happened with the League of Women Voters. You know, these are not tough questions. These aren't questions that folks at a neighborhood barbecue are going to be disagreeing about whether everybody ought to have a chance to speak. This is just common sense,
right?
The American way, and yet we have a government that is instead would like to go with a tribunal in Washington to dictate what people can say or can't say.
Right.
I mean, anyone who's read the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law, it tells groups they can't mention the name of a federal candidate, read incumbent, or show his likeness. I mean, King George couldn't have thought up laws this ridiculous. So we really, I was telling someone the other night. I spoke to a number of people in Nashville, Tennessee, and I said, you know, it's almost like a tale of two cities. It's the best of times. It's the worst of times. It's the best of times because I think most Americans get it, are on the right side. And I don't mean that on the conservative side or the liberal side or they're all libertarians or they agree with every issue that I happen to think. But they get it that freedom is important, that's what makes us unique as Americans, that it's not our wealth. Our wealth came from our freedom. It's not our military might. That came from our freedom and the wealth that came from our freedom. They understand that government doesn't do things very well, not because people in government are bad people. They're good people just like you and me. When people don't have control of their own property, of their own businesses, of their own civic organizations, things start to break down.
Right.
And everyone is telling everyone else what to do with their stuff instead of minding their own business and living their own lives and controlling their own destinies. We get the kind of muddled mess that we have in America today. And we have some technology with the Internet that I think allows people to start to move beyond the big, powerful media conglomerates. But we also have it's also a fairly scary time, I think, in the sense that we have a government that wants to grow and grow and take on more. If it can't do something well, then it wants more money to do more of it. And we have to fight against that. We really have gotten to a point where, I mean, my goodness, we have governments that tell us what we can eat or not eat.
Right.
That's one donut too many, Joe. that's not America.
That's correct.
And it's funny in the sense that most Americans see it as ridiculous. But frankly, it's coming to a town near you. And it would be funny if it was just those crazy New Yorkers.
Right.
Kind of like you read the story out of Berkeley, California or something. You say, oh, those crazy guys. But this is coming everywhere. And we see it in all kinds of other things. I did a commentary recently about the federal government bribing states to make seatbelt wearing a primary offense. It's already against the law not to wear your seatbelt virtually everywhere. I always buckle up. I want to live. I always
right.
make my kids buckle
right.
up.
Yeah, I have a selfish interest in that regard, by
right,
the way.
Right, I'm really addicted to life, and I need my fix by putting on my seatbelt. I also pointed out in this commentary, I make my kids do it. It's not voluntary. They're going to put it on.
That's right.
And they don't give me too much lip. They're pretty good kids. They want to live, too. But I have authority over them. The difference is the government does not, let me repeat it, the government does not have authority over us.
Correct.
And you want to know why? Not because I believe in lawlessness. I believe in the law. But because we are the government. We created the government.
Right.
We're not subservient. We're the boss, not the servants. They serve us. And so when it comes to something like what we eat, or whether we wear our seatbelt, I think that's none of their business.
Correct.
They're not our mom and our dad. We got to get back to that. Of course, the other thing that I think is so outrageous about this is we have a situation now in our country in which most of the money taken from us in taxes is taken by politicians as far away from us as they can get in
right.
Washington.
That's correct. It should be local. Right.
Right.
Whatever happened to the states' rights, the sovereign state? That we lost that also.
Well, we did. And in fact, even the Republicans sometimes who talk about federalism, what they mean is send the money to Washington and then they'll send it back.
That's correct, yeah.
And what's happened is we're paying all this money to the politicians invulnerable, safely far away from us, and then they're using it to bribe our state and local officials
right.
into submission to pass this law or that law. And why do they want police to be able to pull us over? I mean, it's just one more excuse for police to be able to pull us over.
Right.
I think the police are doing a good job. But if you want them to be social engineers, if you want to push police into everybody's business all the time, that is a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for a different government than was written about and established in the Constitution.
Yeah. Paul, I get discouraged, not so much because of the actions of the elected officials. I guess I expect that from them. When I get discouraged because of the mentality of the average American or the average voter. Mm-hmm. They consider libertarianism anarchy because they don't understand it. They actually consider freedom to be a form of anarchy. If there's freedom, you have anarchy. And I hear that. I got very discouraged when the Ron Paul received such a small percentage of the votes. Apparently, people did not understand what he was saying. And I found that very disconcerting. Am I a majority of one, or is there more people out there who feel the same way, or am I feeling that way for some unjustifiably?
Well, you got 300 million people, so it's hard to talk about Americans as one blob of folks
right.
who think a certain way. They think in a lot of different ways. I do think it's frightening that we've been taught again and again. When I was in school, they didn't teach the Constitution.
Right.
They taught all kinds of justifications for every government program I can think of.
That's correct, yeah.
Being very fond of FDR and of the
right.
Great Society and so on.
And how he saved us from the Depression, by the way, which was a fallacy, but, you know, they do teach that.
Well, of course they do. And it's but I look at it the other way, too. I say that folks who believe in government ought to stick its nose in everything, ought to be deciding everything, who don't believe in freedom but basically believe in government nanny state socialism.
Right.
Control the media, control our public schools, and yet they still haven't been able to somehow beat the freedom out of people. People still want to be free. Now, it is true that I think more people today maybe than than 80 years ago believe, or 60 or 40, believe that, you know, anything that, that sounds like a good idea, government ought to force everybody to do.
That's correct.
They believe in certain things. Sometimes they believe in freedom when they want to be free, and don't believe in freedom when they want to tell somebody else what to do. And that's been encouraged. But I think that that's, I don't see that as a natural tendency of folks. And I do think that people are very open to the freedom message. They don't tend to be ideological. The Libertarian Party has a very set idea of how you decide issues on a conceptual basis. People have been taught that pragmatism is better. I don't think they even understand having a philosophy and applying it in a case-by-case basis.
Right.
And you know, ideologies have been really kind of made to be fascism and communism and that kind of thing. So it's not surprising that people are more pragmatic, and it is tough, I think, for it's not just tough for the libertarians, it's also tough for the Constitution Party that believes in certain things, for the Green Party that has some real beliefs. You find the two major parties wanting to basically tell people whatever they want to hear and then do whatever they want after
right.
they win the election.
Right.
I mean, look at the case of Republicans gained the Congress. Why? Because people were sick and tired of Democrat pork barrel spending and arrogance of power. And in no time at all, the Republicans were pork barreling better than the Democrats ever had.
Yes.
This is arrogant. And then the Democrats take over. They're going to take care of earmarks and pork barreling. And they haven't done anything about it.
Right.
So it's you know, they passed a couple feel-good measures that true folks like Tom Coburn, who truly don't like the idea of earmarks, you know, have talked about as complete betrayals. Politicians, as you point out so well, Joe, it's not surprising that they want more power and more power and more power. We do, though, I think, we have to get organized. We have to get organized at the local level. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but if you ask me, I don't spend much time at the federal level. I think the federal government is gone. I don't see any way. I worked on term limits for years. I think term limits might have been able to breathe some new life of decency and a real representative body
right.
in Congress. But we don't have representatives in Congress now. We have rulers,
right.
Or wannabe rulers.
Right.
And so I think the federal government is a hopeless cause until we can restore some measure of citizen control of government at the local and the state level.
That's a good point.
I have to say that this Kelo decision of a few years ago,
yes,
really, to me, throws the gauntlet down. It was something that 90% plus of the American people disagreed with.
Yes.
It didn't matter whether you were on the far left or the far right or anywhere in between.
Right.
Most people, unless they were part of some government development board or some local
right.
politician wanting to spend more tax money, most regular folks of every political persuasion opposed that.
You're referring to the eminent domain situation where the person lost their house after living there for 100 years for a parking lot or something, right, or for a shopping center.
And it's not, you know, libertarians will have some problems with eminent domain, you know, even when it's for a road or some truly public purpose. But what we have today is a complete abuse of eminent domain where you have governments seizing people's property, paying them well below what is just compensation, and handing it over to some private developer who's going to build something big that will produce more tax dollars.
Right.
That is thievery.
Right. Absolutely.
Everybody recognizes it is wrong, and I think it's a sign of how sick our body politic has become. We have to turn that until we're able to stop our local governments from ripping off people. And basically playing Robin Hood in reverse, where they steal from the poor to give to the rich. Until we can stop that at the local level, we're never going to be able to stop the big boys in Washington from ripping everybody off.
Right. Let me ask you this. I did a program on earmarks, and my conclusion, and please critique my conclusion, I said the only way we're going to get rid of earmarks or have a hopes of getting rid of earmarking the way it's done now is not through further legislation. We've tried that. There's three separate bills that have been enacted, all just quite frankly, you know, watered down versions, one of the other. But if we if we enacted term limits where everyone was in office just for one term only, that might put the squabosh on earmarking, because then the lobbyists would not be going to the person who's going to promise them something later on in life, where you could put a stop to that. Is there any validity to that conclusion that I made, or?
I don't think, as much as I think term limits, a friend of mine says, some people say term limits aren't a panacea. Yes, they are. Meaning that they're just great across the board, best thing since sliced bread. But I don't think term limits alone would completely wipe out earmarks. It would begin to create a crack in this career politician
right.
dominated
yeah.
Congress. And it would lead to that, I think. But in essence, part of the problem with earmarks is that it's a sign from Congress that we have more money than we need. If a local area, the voters want to spend money on something, that's fine. But when the federal government is taking money and spending it in the local area, and we know why they do it, so the congressman can beat his chest and play big shot
right.
and say, hey, vote for me, not the other guy running against me, because I'll give you a bunch of money that we stole from other people. And, by the way,
that's,
and you too.
Yeah, but also that money winds up back into the hands of contractors or service providers or whatever, who then in turn give that money back to the congressman or the senator as a campaign contribution.
Absolutely right.
So they're feeding each other with our money.
In much the way that a lot of these AGs, including, I might add, it appears to be your AG there in Oklahoma, are giving all kinds of business to private law firms to sue different companies and try to shake them down. And then those law firms have attorney after attorney writing maximum dollar checks to that attorney general.
Right.
It is, you know... If it weren't for the corruption, there might not be any government at all. It seems it's not a sideline. It has become their main product.
Right. Well, but my logic was this, is that if we did away with – if there were term limits, everyone served one term. If you're a congressman, 2 years, you're out, someone else goes in. Then that money can't return back to you for the next campaign. That was my logic in it.
Right.
And
you know, it makes some logic, Joe, and we favored three terms in the House, two terms in the Senate when I worked with U.S. term limits for a decade or so, and those were pretty popular. That would have a lot of that effect. I've had people argue it should just be one term, that would have all the, you know, even more beneficial effects, and there's an argument there. But, of course, the real problem is they have way too much money in Washington. The fact that they're sending money back to the states for roads, for
right.
bribes about seatbelts,
yeah.
for education, for everything under the sun, any dollar sent to Washington to be sent back is a dollar wasted.
Well,
and it comes back without a full dollar, and of course it comes back with all these mandates. The federal government needs to be cut down to size. But again, we can bitch and moan, frankly, about the federal government. But we aren't in a position to take care of the federal government when our local and state governments are more beholden to Washington than they are to us.
Right.
Because their money is coming from Washington
right.
more than it's coming from us. We have to completely reverse this. We have to have the most money spent at the local and state level, not at the national level. The national level, they should be doing national defense and not much of anything else.
Where does the money come from, Paul? That the Washington gets. Do the states send this money to Washington, or is this the money that comes out of our income taxes, our payroll taxes, goes to Washington and then comes back to the states, or do the states voluntarily give money to the federal government on some sort of basis, and then the federal government divvies it out?
Well, before the 16th Amendment and before the income tax. States were oftentimes, you know, were giving money to the state governments, raised the revenue, and paid their share to the federal government. Of course, there were also tariffs and other things that raised money at the national level.
Right.
But there's a big problem when the federal government can reach into the states and take money. Obviously, all this money they get that they are so nice to send back to states and local governments, they took from people who happen to live in those states and localities.
Right.
So it's a totally perverse distortion of what the way things are supposed to be. We're supposed to have a federal system in which there are different layers of government, and they have their own power and their own
right.
ability to work for citizens. And the closer to home decisions can be made, the better. Now, I'm not a crazy states' rights person. If someone's rights are being violated by a state or by a local government, that is what we want the federal government.
That's correct. That's what they're intended to do, right.
A la Mississippi in 1960s or 50s or what have you, in cases where a state violates somebody's rights, absolutely the federal government has a role to say, no, you're violating their rights.
Correct.
We've got to maintain a Republican form of government. But the states ought to be, when it comes to deciding education policy, when it comes to building roads, when it comes to deciding speed limits and who's wearing a seatbelt and who's not, that decision does not need to be made in Washington.
Yeah. Paul, what about the real ID? Where do you see that going, where many states are objecting to it, but the federal government is pushing it?
Well, again, it's pretty scary because it's hard to see it turning out any way other than the federal government wants it to.
Right.
They have the money, the states and the local politicians that they're trying to push around are going to be susceptible to the big bribes coming from the boys in Washington.
Yeah.
So I think that's very frightening. And it's why, as you know, Joe, a lot of us in the freedom movement, we love technology. We think technology holds, all kinds of promise for making people freer, more independent, more self-aware and powerful, and it's wonderful. But at the same time, government can use it in all kinds of terrible ways.
Right.
And we need protections from that. So, and again, I think a lot of the real ID stuff, you have a lot of people on the left who don't like it. You have people on the right who don't like it.
Right, yeah, that's bipartisan. Sure is.
Yeah, it really is. And it tends to be those people who have a pretty solid understanding of history, and you can't just hand over. Look, we all want to be protected from the bad guys, but never has handing over all your freedom and power to a centralized government given people peace and security and freedom and harmony.
Yeah.
That's not the way history has worked.
Yeah.
There's a great quote by Benjamin Franklin that those who would give up essential liberty
right.
to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
Right.
And I have a corollary to it, and that is in the entire history of mankind, no one has ever successfully traded freedom for safety.
That's correct.
Never.
Right. Paul, on Wikipedia, I was taking a look at your bio, and it said that you are more centrist than either left libertarian or rightist. What do they mean by that?
You know, it's interesting because I saw that, and I kind of thought about whether I agree or disagree with that. I think what it's speaking to, I certainly do agree with, and that is, I don't view myself as a moderate, but moderation isn't a bad thing. Here's what I think that's all about, and I think it's something to keep in mind wherever you are on the political spectrum. The process is very important. We all have our individual views on different issues, but I believe that government ought to be small enough to fit in the Constitution. And that the real
right.
problem is that too many decisions are being made by a tiny plurality of people in power, and that it doesn't allow us the kind of diversity and freedom of choice that will allow different people to try different things,
right.
and then we can all learn from each other. So I'm very much in favor of diversity. I'm in favor of democracy. I think a lot of times people on the conservative side view democracy as a bad word, and of course it can be abused. If we're going to vote on everything,
right,
that's
right.
a mess.
Right.
But anything that government has the power to decide ought to be decided, and that means not in your bedroom, not what you eat at the donut shop. Not government has a narrow area to stop people from using force or fraud against other people, but in that narrow area where government ought to be functioning. it ought to be democratic. And that means
right.
we need things like term limits that allow more people to be part of the process, don't allow people to entrench themselves in office. We need initiative and referendum in every state, in every locality. We even need it at the national level someday when we've restored the state and local governments to some semblance of citizen control. We need those types of things because I'm not afraid of democracy. I know we're not. If my neighbors believe in totalitarianism, then I'm sunk.
Nice.
I'm willing. A guy once asked me, I was trying to convince him to support initiative and referendum. He ended up joining the cause. And we went out to lunch when he was still pretty skeptical. And he asked me, Paul, do you trust the people? I mean, we hadn't even gotten our soup or our drinks yet. And here he's asking me this tough question. I said, no, because the people can be wrong.
That's right.
But I trust the people a whole heck of a lot more than I trust the politicians.
Right.
And that's what it's all about. We don't have to, I'm not afraid of my neighbors. I'm not afraid of a lot of the decent people I know who happen to be much more pro-socialist than I am.
Right.
I'm not afraid of people who disagree with me on an issue. That is just to be expected. I am afraid of a powerful government that hijacks the process. In the state of Oklahoma, you could only vote for the Republican or Democrat in the last election. It was the only state in the country that was that bad.
Right.
That is a sign of a sickness. The fact that the Supreme Court rules that it's public use for people to steal somebody's home and give it to someone else who can produce more tax dollars out of that land, that is a sick, political system. And these are signs that those of us who care and understand how critical freedom is, we can't take those signs and just kind of keep whistling past the graveyard.
Right.
We have to start taking some action. And that's why, let me just give people a couple of websites. I spoke earlier about my situation in Oklahoma where I'm facing 10 years in prison. It's, I pinch myself just kind of to think, is this really,
yeah.
One of these days I think maybe I'll wake up from this bad dream. For basically being involved in the petition drive that did everything according to the rules as we understood them and as state officials understood them. If you want to know more about that, you can go to freepauljacob.com.
Right.
That's freepauljacob.com. Also, I talk about these things on a daily basis at the thisiscommonsense.com website. That's associated with the Sam Adams Alliance, which is
right.
a group in Chicago. I'm a senior advisor, and we work basically pulling together activists around the country, helping them learn from each other, helping create information and pushing for transparency and accountability. I really believe that the American people are smart enough, good enough, and want to restore the kind of accountability and citizen control of government that we need. But we can't do it isolated. We got to get together. And so I encourage people, if you're out there, if you hear this, if you know that this is right, you can agree or disagree with me on all the fine points. But if you know that our country is in trouble,
right.
Get involved and let's help change this.
Yeah. Paul, do you think we'll ever see? I think I know the answer to this because I think you're not too optimistic about what's going to happen on the federal level. Something like proportional voting, where if 35% of the people vote a certain way, they have representation equal to 35% like they do in some other countries?
And that's always, I was very much opposed to that idea for a long time. But I don't dismiss that idea. I think that it could be helpful. But again, we ought to have that discussion. But the problem we have today is much more fundamental than, I think switching the voting system, might help us get more choices. I don't mean switching, night and day, but there are systems in which you can elect people in bigger areas and have more representation for disparate viewpoints.
Right.
I think term limits actually would go to help that a lot too, because you have a district in Michigan where John Dingell represents it. His father held the seat before him. In fact, he and his father have held that seat since 1925. That's 80-something years in which if he won every election by 51%, you had 49% of the people of that district who for 80 years didn't have anybody representing
right.
them. That's not healthy. That's
right.
very unhealthy.
Right.
And it means if you were to have a debate against him in that district and he says, this is my experience in Washington, there's no living person other than him who could say, well, wait a second, I have a little different perspective when I served.
Right.
So term limits would go a long way to help some of that stuff. But I'm open to proportional representation and some of these other things, and I think it ought to be experimented with more. Again, I'm not afraid of my neighbors. I think that, and I'm not saying that they're always going to be right. They're going to make terrible mistakes, but their heart's in the right place, and when they make a mistake, they'll correct it. And that's much different than being controlled by politicians who have their own agenda and who are much more willing to listen to the big special interest than to what 80% of the people want. I mean, term limits was a great issue to point that out. So is initiative and referendum. I saw a poll in Oklahoma that 90% plus favor initiative and referendum, even while the attorney general, other statewide officials, number of people in the legislature would like to wreck that process.
Right.
They're in it for their own purposes, and that's what's destructive. Good-hearted people who have the wrong philosophy, you know, they can frustrate you, but at the end of the day, they'll get it right. And we'll work together, and maybe we're wrong about something too. You know, we can make mistakes. That's not why I'm scared about the future of my country.
Yeah.
I'm scared because I see a wonderful group of people who live in this country being controlled by folks who have a different agenda than what's best for our kids at school, than what's best for workers in the economy, than what's best for business and innovation, who would rather have a healthcare system that they control that doesn't come up with as many cures to save your life, as long as they control it.
Right.
That's what scares me.
Right. What, you know, talking about someone who has their heart in the right place, that reminds me of Ralph Nader. Here's a guy that I think his heart is in the right place. I don't agree with his solutions in every case, but I certainly enjoy listening to him because he seems to speak from the heart and he's not speaking from a political podium. What is your opinion of Ralph Nader, and what do you think he brings to this whole campaign?
You know, it's funny you say that because I've met Ralph Nader. I took a call from Ralph Nader years ago at home on a Saturday, and I noticed that he was working on Saturday. I have a tremendous amount of respect. I disagree with him, I think, on 90% plus.
Yeah.
But I respect him.
Right.
And I know that on the things I agree with him on, he won't sell me out. And on the things I disagree with him on, he really believes what he believes.
Right,
and I think he's wrong, but I can respect him.
That's right.
I respect him more than a lot of politicians who agree with me a lot more. And I do think he brings something to the debate because I know that I know a lot of liberal folks who are likely to vote for the Democrat. But the Democrat is going to sell them down the river.
Right.
The Democrat is not much different than the Republican. And it's interesting that to me, Hillary Clinton and John McCain and Barack Obama are closer to each other philosophically.
Oh yes.
Than I think a lot of Republicans or Democrats want to admit.
Correct.
And it's not, you know, and I'm not trying to say that there's a huge difference, because I think that if more decisions were solved in town meetings, if more power was at the local level, there'd be a lot more diversity of what was being attempted in order to solve problems in education and healthcare and all kinds of things, and that would be good for the country as a whole. It wouldn't mean that my way always won. I haven't voted for many people who have been elected, so I'm used to losing elections.
Right.
That doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
So I share your view on Ralph Nader, that I think he's a guy who you can respect.
You think
I
he'll have?
With him, but I respect him, and I can't say that about most
right.
of the politicians.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I just wondering, do you think he'll have any impact on this election at all? I mean, with the way it's going, or you think the emotional hype is so high with this Obama-Clinton thing.
Well, I really think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Obama and Clinton on the same ticket. And, of course, that only works if Hillary wins the nomination. Obama has to be on the ticket because that's where the energy is.
Right.
If Obama wins, Clinton is just an albatross around his neck.
Right, right. She's going to be a problem.
Old hack Democrat policies. And so I don't think she helps him at all. And I see that kind of as a... I guess, you know, Nader, I think if Clinton is the nominee, will likely have a lot more impact. Now, I don't think he's going to have huge impact. It's going to depend on how close it is. But I suspect that he could, as much as he's just been battered by the Democratic establishment.
Right.
Who, you know, used to like him, but now that he's not playing ball exactly how they like it, you know, he, in fact, a lot of the nasty tactics that have been used against conservative initiative efforts around the country that I've certainly been on the receiving end of, he has filed suit against the Democratic National Committee for using those same tactics against his presidential petition drives and so on. So, you know, that they have really gone after him and tried to destroy him in every way they could, and that has minimized, I think, his effectiveness. I think they've had some impact. But if it's Obama, I would expect him to not have nearly as much impact.
Right.
If it's Clinton, I think he'll have a lot more.
Right, right. You know, one question that is never asked during the debates, we call them debates. It annoys me to use that term, these sound bites, you know, that they use these.
Each person gets to speak an equal amount of time.
Yeah, and what I love is when you know even in the Democratic debates, Mike Ravel on one debate, and I don't listen to all of them because I just can't stomach them. It's very difficult for me. I'll listen for a little while, but then I have to leave because I can't take them. But one that I saw I thought was interesting is after 30 minutes, Mike Ravel raises his hand. He says, "Can I join in on this debate?" And they said something like, "We'll get back to you," you know. I mean, it's so obvious that they're giving attention to, they've been told to give attention to the front runners in every case. In every, each media outlet does the exact same thing. So you know it's all being controlled by the same people because they're doing the same thing. Obviously, if this was a independent media outfit and you and I were the moderators and we asked the questions of just two of the eight people up there, our boss would call us in and we would be pounding dirt, you know, pounding the pavement the next day.
Wasn't it Stalin who, I could be wrong, but I think it may have been, who said, people can choose all they want as long as I get to decide the choices.
Yes.
But that's kind of how the media is.
Yeah.
They'll let us choose, but they'll decide what our choices are. And you know, this whole idea of deciding it by how much money somebody has raised or by how much support they have, the whole point of debates is for people to get to know the candidates. The polls before the debates begin are about who knows whose name.
That's right.
So, I mean, we really, that is frustrating. But again, one of the things that I found frustrating about this year, Joe, is that the presidential election is not going to make much difference because I don't happen to believe, and it might have been different. Mike Ravel had some interesting ideas about initiative and referendum at the national level. So that's something new. I think Ron Paul had some things to say that was terribly important for people to hear.
Right.
But I do think going into this, most people who know politics knew we weren't likely to get any candidate that was going to make some huge difference in Washington.
Right. That's right.
What bothers me is people can make a difference in their local level, even in their state government, but frankly, I don't think they can make much difference at the presidential level. And what has the media got everybody who's interested in politics focusing on? The presidential race.
Right.
We're not going to be saved by some guy, some politician riding in on a white horse into Washington. It's going to take the folks listening to you right now, Joe.
Right.
If they don't get involved, if they don't make the difference, it is not going to be some superstar politician who has all the answers and saves the day. It's up to us.
That's right. And you're absolutely correct. There's a movement here in Tulsa And it seems to be growing. It's what's interesting is that so many of my friends are, they consider themselves Democrats. They're really socialist, and they don't realize they're socialist. And, you know, we talk a lot about that, obviously. But yet there were many very staunch conservative, evangelical conservatives that literally have dropped out altogether and come on. They came to the dark side, the libertarian side. And that was really encouraging because they talk about their transformation and where they were, and when they look back, they can't believe that that's the position that they took at one time. Hold on just one second. We have a caller. Can you want to take a call, please, Paul?
Sure.
Thank you. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, where you're calling from, and your question, please. Thank you for calling. Ooh. Hello.
And my question is, since most of the candidates, from my vantage point, are selected instead of elected, what could we do when both parties are not really trying to help the country out of the direction it's going? You know, the economy is bankrupt. It's social injustice constantly within the country. You got really uprisings among the dissatisfied people within there, constantly marches against the war. You know, where are we to go, you know, in a direction right now, because everything seems to be failing. So I would like to hear what's your point of view, or what can we do, because Democrat Republicans are not really concerned. You know, our radical Republican, I mean, independent, but at the same time, same financial dollars financing all the three parties.
Right, right. Well, just two parties, because the independents aren't really a party. But more and more Americans are becoming independents. If you look over time, the Republicans and Democrats have both lost a lot of support. Tremendous fewer people, by percentage, are registered Republican or Democrat. A lot more independents. I think what you can do is start reaching out close to home to people, and don't be afraid to reach out across the aisle. I was watching the river tax that they attempted to push through in Tulsa. And I was excited to see that fought. I was disappointed to see recently in Oklahoma City that poor people are going to be paying more taxes to subsidize wealthy businessmen who want a fancy place for a basketball team to play. I'm a big sports fan.
Right.
I love
yeah.
basketball. I'd love to go to games, but I don't want to force somebody else to pay for it. And a lot of those type coalitions at the local level bring together everyone from Green Party people on the left to libertarians on the right. They bring evangelical conservatives and moderates who just say, hey, this isn't right, to, you know, all kinds of people. And those are the types of battles I would get involved in. I don't think there's a whole lot, realistically, that a person can do at this point to save the national government, which has become a monster. I think we've got to be focused at the state and local level, where I think you can really make a difference. And I encourage you to find ways to reach out locally and get involved in things that will bring you in contact with other folks. And don't be afraid to work with people who disagree with you on one issue on another issue where you agree.
Yep. Caller, I'll have to take you off the air because we're going off the air in about less than 2 minutes. I'd like to thank you for calling in. And thank you for listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Appreciate it. Good night.
Okay.
Thank you. Paul, we have about a minute to go. I want to give this minute to you so that you can tell our listeners who something about where you like to direct them. And I just want to give you that 1 minute to a little advertisement for yourself or what you need to do.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Joe. It's been a pleasure to talk about these things because they're important. You know, when I was younger, I got life insurance because my wife told me I had to, but I thought I'd live forever. I don't think I'll live forever more. And so, you know, I want my kids to live in a country, and I want their kids to
right.
live in a country that's like I grew up in.
Right.
And we've got to fight to protect that. And I
right.
think we're entering this fight late. I would urge people to get involved. Go to thisiscommonsense.com. I have a daily commentary, but you'll see other things by the Sam Adams Alliance there. and you can get involved in different issues and so on. I encourage you to go to that website. Also, I'd encourage you to go to freepauljacob.com
right.
and see what's happening to me personally. I've got some risk here. I have someone who'd like to put me in prison for petitioning the government. We're going to have to fight back against this, right. And you can do a lot. Anything you can do in your local area to make it a more accountable government is going to pay off in the long run all over the country. So
okay.
Start somewhere, do something, get involved, and get meeting other people, and let's work together as Americans. That's how we got this country in the first place. That's how we'll keep it.
Thank you very much, Paul. I do hope we have an opportunity. I have an opportunity to meet you personally, and maybe that'll come soon somewhere. Okay, Paul? And I want to thank you so much for calling in and sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, and Paul, if you can send me an email to comments@libertytalkradio.com and send me your mailing address, I'll send you a Liberty Talk Radio t-shirt.
Sounds great.
Okay. Thank you very much, Paul, and good luck to you and good night.
Good night, Joe.
Wow, that was an excellent interview. This is the end of today's broadcast, and we'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, folks, there's no middle ground. And remember, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, and that'll be Thursday morning live, 6:30 a.m. Central Daylight Time now, and we'll have that squared away. I know we ran 1 hour late this evening because the time change, which I did not take into account. But we'll be 6:30 a.m. on Thursday. That's the 13th. We'll have a half-hour talk show, and you can call in at that time. Good night.